Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we have repeat guest Chloe. Chloe, thanks again for joining us one more time.
Thank you so much for having me again.
I mean, the last one went pretty well. I mean, I don't know, Monica, yeah. What was our listenership on that one?
We got at least me and Brayden. So two?
And I think we got some Pittsburgh representation.
Oh, good. Okay.
So
yeah, we'll hit double digits any day now.
Maybe like up to four.
Today we're doing Baby Driver, which is an action thriller that came out in 2017. Its director was Edgar Wright, and it stars Ansel Elgort, who plays the primary character, Baby. He was the guy from Fault in Our Stars. That's what I know him from. Is he famous in anything else?
Is he West Side Story?
Oh, yeah, probably something like that. Well, and probably the reason that you haven't heard of him much lately is that he is donezo, cancel.
Okay, so I don't know if you can see in the notes, I canceled the guy who plays Doc, and then Jess was mentioning that Ansel got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what the circumstances were, but I guess from now on we'll just refer to him as Baby.
Sure.
Which is going to pose challenges later on when we talk about infants, but we'll just make that delineation. Some guy also plays Doc, who's a crime boss. John Hamm is in this movie. He plays Buddy. He's a fellow criminal. Is this Isa Gonzalez plays Darling, who is Buddy's love interest? Wife, I think.
I believe it's wife.
Jamie Foxx plays a pretty big role. He's a fellow criminal as well. He plays Bats. John Bernthal plays a smaller role, but he is another criminal. He plays Griff. And then I think the only... Oh, I didn't even write his love interest. I was going to put that at the end. Her name's Lily James, I think.
Yep.
And she looks familiar. What is she most famous from?
She was in Mamma Mia. She played like young Meryl Streep.
Yes.
She was in that movie Yesterday. That was like that movie where the whole world thinks the Beatles don't exist or whatever. You know, that one. She was the love interest in that. Yeah.
To be clear, she was in Mamma Mia 2.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You might also recognize her from a movie called Burnt.
Mm.
She had Burnt.
Apparently she was in Burnt, a movie that we watched together. And I don't recall at all. So.
I don't think she made our list for Burnt.
Yeah, I don't know who she played. She played someone called Sarah.
Don't remember her. Okay, well, she plays Deborah in this movie, who was Baby's love interest. And then I think another character worth mentioning is Baby's foster father, Joseph, played by C.J. Jones. And I think that's all the characters that I'd probably touch on at any point in the movie. Am I missing somebody else?
No, I think that's most of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's pretty much it. Just to clarify, are we not saying the guy who played Doc's name? Like, are we avoiding saying his name?
I think it's fine if we do say it, but I'm going to try to not.
Sure.
And you just do what makes you comfortable.
Okay.
So, I could care less either way.
Got it.
So the summary for this movie is that autistic, music-loving teen heartthrob and Grand Theft Auto aficionado Baby is in debt to a crime boss, Doc, who forces him to use his stuntman driving skills to be the getaway driver for his four-man criminal activities. After seemingly dozens of jobs, all of which are wildly successful with minimal casualties during the actual heists, he is one job away from repaying his debt to Doc the crime boss. With freedom in reach, he begins to show somewhat of an Oedipal love interest in a local diner whore, but then under penalty of death is reminded by the crime boss that just because his debt is repaid doesn't mean that his job is over. So they'll continue working together as far as the crime boss is concerned. He's just now going to be getting his full cut. Baby begrudgingly accepts, but simultaneously plans to flee west with the breakfast bimbo. And that's all I wrote.
Well, some of that was right.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that summary.
I don't know. Really? I thought it was spot on.
It's pretty good. I don't know about Breakfast Bimbo.
Yeah, that seemed needless.
And also, I don't, he's not autistic. Right?
Really?
Yeah.
He's just traumatized severely?
I think he just has hearing problems from the car crash, right?
Yeah, yeah. He has tinnitus, like really bad tinnitus. And I think it's made pretty clear in the movie through the, like, seven different conversations that the characters have about this, that he's not autistic. Don't you remember, you know, Spacey said...
Was he slow?
Yeah.
I mean, how could I not? It was made into a banger of a song, you know?
Yeah, a real banger of a song. Oh my God, I have thoughts on that too. But yeah, no, I don't think that he's autistic.
Okay.
I mean, we're all a little on the spectrum probably, but like, I don't think that he's like autistic.
Okay, but it's to the point where like his affection for music limits his ability to interact with other people.
Yeah, I guess.
It's detrimental to his interpersonal relationships. It consumes him to an unhealthy degree. It's not just like
he enjoys... Is it detrimental to his personal relationships, though?
Yeah, like, I guess not like, that he can Ripley lip read.
We can point to all of his relationships. So he's got a relationship with Lily James, the diner lady, and he's got a relationship with Joe. He's got a relationship with Doc, okay? But music doesn't, like, interfere with any of the relationships with those people.
Only his fellow criminals? So maybe it's by design. Maybe it's a defense mechanism for him.
I mean, the other criminals just seem to have their own problems. Like, he doesn't seem to be causing most of the issues with the other criminals.
Right. They're all just like weirdly focused on it. Like they, for some reason, they all seem to care so much that he's wearing headphones when like in reality, nobody would question that even for a second. People would just be like, oh, okay, whatever. And they'd move on. But in this movie, everybody's obsessed with it. He's the talk of the town. He's the talk of the town.
I mean, he really is. Every single person, fellow criminal that he meets, is just like, well, except for Buddy, maybe, and Darling. They're just unnecessarily aggressive toward
obsessed.
Him.
Obsessed.
They just hate him initially. They look at him, they're just like, I hate this motherfucker. Even after, so the first scene is a successful heist. I don't know is it a bank robbery? And that's like the opening scene. It's a pretty cool getaway scene. Like, it's Fast and Furious-esque, I had. He drifts pretty much everywhere. But it's successful. Like, they make it back to headquarters, and John Bernthal is just an asshole to Baby for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. For no reason. He did such a good job. He got them there safe. They didn't have any sort of incidents. Nothing bad happened. But for some reason, the Punisher is like ripping into Baby, and we spend this entire scene, like the entire scene is just the Punisher yelling at Baby. And then he never comes back. John Bernthal never comes back, but like he had been set up so big in this scene. So, okay. So like if he doesn't come back, maybe the whole point of him being in this movie was to just acknowledge Baby, like acknowledge what's his deal. Why is he weird? Why does he have headphones on? What's all that? That could have just been like one and done. This is like the background on why Baby is the way he is. He tends to like make some people feel uncomfortable with that. That could have been it. But we have the same conversation four separate times in this movie. I counted them last night. I counted how many times we have this conversation about why is he wearing headphones? Is he retarded? Is he blah, blah, blah? Why is he doing this? He sucks. We hate him. Blah, blah, blah. Four times.
Goodness. I wear headphones all over the place and people do ask about it constantly. But
really?
John Bernthal, yes, both of those things. John Bernthal does sort of come back, but he's played by Jamie Foxx.
Yes. Yeah.
Because those are the same character. Like,
correct.
Like, it's not like they don't use the same crew multiple times. Right? Because, like, they do. Because they use Buddy and Darling.
Yep.
But then John Bernthal and the Asian guy, who I thought was Daniel Day-Kim, but is actually just a completely different guy. He's much younger and doesn't look very much like him. Is also involved. But, like, yeah, everyone just has, like, a real... And it's not even, like, the first... There's a scene later where, like, the kid's, like, trying to drive away, but he needs to, like, reset his music, and it, like, sort of gets them... It, like, doesn't get them into trouble, but, like, you could understand them being, like, what the fuck are you doing? You're playing with your music when we're supposed to be fleeing. But the first one, he just, like, completely dangles the cop, sets up this, like, impromptu shell game in a tunnel, and just, like, drives off flawless execution, and the guy just, like, I don't know, John Barenthal, in his one scene, I guess they just told him to go absolutely nuts, and is just, like, a huge asshole, and keeps smacking off the glasses. The kid keeps pulling out new glasses, which I think is fantastic. Like,
yeah, that's funny.
That's the part I actually like. But it's like, what? Why is any of this happening? It's just like, this isn't a real character. And then we have the same thing with Jamie Foxx, who, like, why isn't Jamie Foxx just here the whole time is my question.
Right.
I think it's just so that they can squeeze that line and he never uses the same crew twice.
But like, why? That's not true, though.
Right. I guess technically it wasn't the same four of them, but it's like, it's the same. It's mostly the same. It's there's
three
one
out of the four.
Extra person.
Yeah. It's not like, he uses the same players, but it's never the same four-man roster. That's his rule.
They could have just eliminated this whole conversation and then just, like, not even said that. It could have just been, like, nobody would be like, oh, wait, there's different people in this crew now. They could have literally just done one heist with these people, another heist with these people, and another heist with these people. They're just all people under the payroll. Sometimes it's your shift, and sometimes it's not your shift. Like, nobody, it wouldn't be an issue, but they had to, like, you know... I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say his name because that's what I'm thinking of him. Kevin Spacey says, I never work with the same crew twice. And then we're thinking about it. Now we're thinking about it. And I'm like, well, okay, three out of the four are exactly the same. Like, don't make me think about that. Don't say something stupid just to, like, sound cool. You know, he thinks it sounds cool.
Yeah, because he's also like, this guy's my driver for every job. So it's like, there's at least some continuity going on. And, like, I don't know why, like, why does it have to be a little different? Mm-hmm. They have that other crew in for, like, one job, and I guess they suck, which is why he goes back to the... where's he recruiting these people, I guess, is the other question? Because he keeps, like, is every job, like, we need a driver, and we need just, like, this, you know, weird PDA couple, and then we need, like, one unhinged lunatic, and then they're just, like, they fill out all the roles, and then they have a crew?
So that's formula. That's the big money.
In the Mike Myers armored truck heist, does that mean the two guys in the back are lovers? Like, were they kissing each other?
I assume so.
Because that's the perfect composition for a four-man team.
So, that one, you understand they get rid of the Asian guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know his name. Does anyone remember his
JD.
Name? JD, okay. They get rid of JD because he was a moron, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. He left his gun at the scene of the crime somehow.
Yeah, he forgot his shot, yeah. But, like, they don't tell you why they don't use John Barenthal. Like, why didn't they call, I guess they could have called him back or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it's like, they, like, give an explanation as to one guy disappearing.
Yeah.
But not the other guy. And one of them's played by, like, a pretty big actor.
Flea.
I guess maybe he's bigger now, right?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Flea. No. But Flea, they could have brought Flea back.
Well, yeah, no, you're right, Monica. John Bernthal is a much bigger actor, but John Bernthal's last line as he steps off the elevator into the parking garage is, if you don't hear from me, that means I'm dead, right? So I think we can just presume that he died in doing a job for a different crime boss.
Oh, I guess.
And maybe that's setting the tone for the stakes of the game in which Baby has found himself.
I guess, but they don't even mention him again. Like, I feel like if they are trying to make that point, then they would say, like, well, what happened to John Barenthal? And someone would say, he didn't make it, or, you know, whatever. Like, they would say whatever heisty cool thing they wanted to say, but they didn't really, like, point to it ever again. So, like, yeah, maybe he's dead, but, like, I don't know. And the thing is, we wouldn't even be talking about this if Kevin Spacey didn't say, I never do a heist with the same crew twice. Like, we wouldn't even be talking about this. And the only reason we're talking about it is because it doesn't make any sense.
But yeah, I just want to. We talked about like the first scene, right, where they do the heist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's like a 5-minute scene of what appears to be like a production assistant played by Ansel Elgort going to get coffee and then walking back to the criminal hideout for no reason.
No, like,
why was this scene left in the movie?
This is introducing one of the unique characteristics of the movie. It's that music is incorporated into the scenes, and music sets the tempo for his life.
But just like, do that in the movie.
The cadence for his... Yeah, I mean, you could, but this is just a calm, you know, he's only going to get coffee, there's nothing else going on. Let's appreciate the fact that this is going to be a feature of the movie and you should look out for it in the future.
Right. Like, there's nothing else going on in that scene because they want you to notice all the graffiti in the background. They want you to notice how, like, it's timing up with everything. Like, yeah. Like, that's like a stylistic scene that, in my opinion, okay, fine. Edgar Wright, you can do Edgar Wright. Like, you can be yourself in this. But, like, but you're right. It was really long. It was boring.
I thought, like, why wasn't that the diner? I don't know. Like,
right.
Why? Because he talks to some girl there. So at some point, he actually talks to the coffee lady, which established that he talks, and then later one of the people asks if he's mute. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it would have been more impactful if we hadn't seen him talk before.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
But they like established to us, so it was just like, I guess it was just more of the criminals being assholes for no reason.
Yeah, no, but you're right.
I don't know. So, yeah, then he has to do... Oh, sorry, what was it?
Well, I was going to say, that scene where he talks to the barista, like, he walks in the door, and I understand, okay... Let me just say that I understand that this movie is a stylistic movie. It's intended to be like a comic book heist type of movie. It reminds me a lot of like Scott Pilgrim and, you know, I mean, well, obviously it reminds me of other Edgar Wright movies, which I appreciate and I like. I liked Scott Pilgrim. I know that's kind of a controversial opinion, but I liked Scott Pilgrim.
Did he do Scott Pilgrim? Then that makes perfect sense. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did Shaun of the Dead. He did Hot Fuzz. So, like, you see Edgar Wright influencing himself in this movie. But it's like he took those things about those movies and like forced them here in a way that it didn't work for me. I can't explain it, but it did not work for me. It just felt cringy at every moment. Every single moment of this movie was cringe for me, except for a couple of scenes. And there were a couple of lines that made me laugh. Like, I, you know, it's not all bad, but it's like the writing was subpar. They phoned it in the writer's room because they just thought they had it in the bag with this stylistic idea that they had. And then why I say that is because the moment in the coffee shop when he walks in and like the door hasn't even begun to close behind him when the coffee shop, the barista is like, next. And I'm like, okay, wait, Jesus.
He was a bit aggressive. Yeah, that was confusing. But yeah, his conversation with the baristas to the cadence of the song, like I think his lyrics become his words that he says. Yeah, it's a style choice. It really is.
Yeah. I actually missed that the words that he was saying matched up with the song. I did miss that.
I think it was as simple as like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. And then I guess that makes more sense too. Cause I was like, why is he taking so long to think of I want four black coffees? He like stands there for two solid beats to think of four black coffees.
I mean, the timing had to be right. And that comes back later whenever they're doing the Mike Myers armored truck heist, because he's like, I got to play the song over.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that makes more sense now. Okay. I get that.
The music is the cadence to his life. Mm-hmm. But you know, so the criminals think that he has tinnitus. You mentioned four conversations about him being slow, but that's not four conversations about the music, right? Cause I was kind of confused. Mm-hmm. They think he listens to music because he has the tinnitus. And I think throughout the movie, we understand that to be true. But then they have flashbacks where he's like a 7-year-old who gets an iPod. And then he insists on listening to music in the back of the car, and he listens to music as he's going to bed. And it sort of is a consequence of his childhood trauma, not only for the car accident when he was listening to music, but to drown out the sounds of his abusive father yelling at his mother. Right. So that's the original impetus for him listening to music 100% of the time. But then it just like transforms into tinnitus, I guess, because it's easier than saying, oh, my father was fucked up when I was a kid and I just listened to music to drown it out. And it now is debilitating to me as an adult. It's just easier to tell people I got tinnitus.
I mean, I see your point, but I think it's probably both. I think he, you know, he uses the music to like drown out the things that are overwhelming about life going on around him. And then he just, this is constant. But I do think that it's plausible that he has tinnitus as a result of the accident, like the car accident, you know, if something was so loud that it like blew out his ears. And then he has like debilitating, tinnitus that he has to have the headphones in all the time for like multiple reasons, tinnitus being one of them and like the easiest one to explain.
Gotcha. So he's not comprehensive in his explanation for why he listens to music. And I guess he doesn't need to be. So right. Let him pass.
Right. Except that it's discussed 4 separate times in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, in the John Bernthal scene, to set it up that, like, the criminals hate Baby for some unknown reason, is it just that he, like, doesn't fit the role of a criminal? He doesn't look the part? So they just are unnecessarily antagonistic toward him? But his response to this, he just, like, high-roads everyone, and he's just unflappable, calm as a cucumber. I think John Bernthal calls him a totem pole.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, that was, you got me. I have no idea why they don't like him other than he's quiet. But like, I just feel like every other heist movie kind of sets it up to make us as the viewers just accept that there's, wow, all these different kooky personalities in a heist. We've got the fun one. We've got the sexy one. We've got the quiet one. We've got the one that doesn't speak English. You know, like there's always a host of different people. So this movie trying to force down our throats, like it's weird that this one is quiet. It's like, it's not that weird. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me why they hate him so much for that.
Yeah, well, it's just John Bernthal and then Jamie Foxx who hates, because Darling and Buddy seem to like him fine.
I guess, but like,
the
I
mean, other two not, guys in the Mike Myers heist also hate him. Like JD, Sweet. Whenever they're introduced to him, they're like, "Who the fuck are you? Why don't you have any face tattoos like I do?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, is he retarded? So you know,
yeah, John Bernthal is a real like criminal. Who, like, is into the culture of being a criminal and, like, seems to, like, really identify as a criminal and is sort of mad that Baby Driver does not do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, other than that, like, he's just a dick for no reason.
Absolutely no reason.
I guess that's why they got rid of him. It was just, like, a bad culture fit. But, like, I don't know. He sucked. I don't know.
I guess. I didn't mention that. But like,
it would have made more sense if, like, Baby was more annoying in some ways, and like in the people who like dealt with him had learned to deal with it, but other people coming in were like, this is weird. But it was like he would just sit there quietly and everyone would just be like filled with white hot rage about this.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, despite the fact that he doesn't look the part, I mean, he definitely fulfills the role of getaway driver flawlessly for the most part, or 100% of the time. Like, he never fails at getting away, does he?
I mean, mm-hmm. I guess.
Not in the heists, I guess.
They always make it back to HQ safely. Like, he's the guy for the job. He's the lucky charm of Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stealing a ton of money.
A ton of money. Yeah. Much money.
I think I read somewhere the average bank robbery is like $8,000.
Oh, that's just because it's the counter. It's not actually getting into the vault.
Yeah, I think so. But, like, Doc is taking his money because we find out that he owes Doc because he had robbed Doc. He hijacked or jacked Doc's car, like, in the past, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
and it had loot in the back, and then Doc was like, hey, you stole my car, but I let you do it, but here, you now owe me, like, millions of dollars, apparently.
Yeah, so he's only keeping 10 grand from each heist, it seems like.
Baby only keeps 10 grand from each heist. And Doc takes the remaining 200 grand, it seems?
Yeah, and they had split it, because they're like, everyone gets an equal cut, so it seems like there's like seems like they stole like $1 million per heist. And then you look at his stash, and he has like 100-something grand in the floorboards, so it's like, they've committed so many very successful, very large robberies at this point.
And they've never been caught. And this has been going on since Baby was like, what, 12 or something?
I don't think that's what it is. He's been boosting cars since he was old enough to see over the dash. But I think he may have only stolen Doc's car whenever he was in his late teens. So, but he does make a mixtape for every single heist. And he seems to have dozens of mixtapes, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, does he? Well, is that what? Yeah. Oh, yeah, he has a ton of mixtapes.
The amount of heists that is implied by this, the sheer quantity, is, I think, accurately reflected by the sheer quantity of cop cars that exist in this town. I don't know if either of you were also blown away, but like in the first scene, there's like 70 cop cars after them. like at no point is there not at least like 4 cop cars on them. And they're all so coordinated. They're incredible, these cop cars. They're like, Baby Driver is like pulling a disappearing wormhole act where he's like on one side of the city and then boom, he's on the other side of the city. And well, don't worry about it though. There's 6 cop cars waiting for him there, and they all like chase him with all their things on. It's like the cop presence in this city is, wow. I mean, it's commendable. It's truly incredible.
So it's based in Atlanta. I don't know if Atlanta known for having bunches of cops? Maybe.
I don't think so.
Isn't that where Cop City is now?
It's where Spaghetti Junction is, which we now learn. I mean,
but they never really talk about Atlanta, right?
No, they are in Atlanta, but they don't talk about it much.
Yeah, it's not like Atlanta.
They just make a couple Atlanta references whenever Doc is explaining his origins with Baby. He's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you never heard of the Spirit of 85, which is the primary interstate through Atlanta? And then he had them all through Spaghetti Junction, which is like the interchange of 85 and something else. And that's all we know about Atlanta, other than Lily James has a southern accent.
And everybody's putting on like a real bad performance of southern accents in this movie.
People all have some kind of accent in this movie. Uh-huh.
John Hamm's fake, I'm so hot and dangerous southern accent grates me. Like, I can't even explain to you. I don't mind John Hamm. I don't like John Hamm, but his performance in this movie, oh my god, so annoying. And then the southern accent just sent me over the edge.
Yeah, see, I think I don't like John Hamm.
Mm. That's fair.
And I also didn't like him in this. Mm-hmm. I think he was in Mad Men, and he was good at Mad Men, and then they put him in a bunch of other stuff, and he should have just stayed in Mad Men.
So he was, yes, he was the main guy in Mad Men. He, like, is Mad Men. And he did an incredible job in that. Like, so good. And then it kind of was discovered that he has some comedic chops. Like, he is a funny, he can be funny. He was in, like, Bridesmaids. You remember he was the guy that Kristen Wiig is hooking up with at the beginning of the movie. He has a role in like 30 Rock as a recurring character. Recurring guest character. He can be funny and he can be an okay actor. He was also in Fargo in one of the later seasons of Fargo, like 3, I think. So he has some range. But like, I don't really think that the range is good enough. Like I think he's just doing like Don Draper in every movie, but then also like sometimes Don Draper's funnier. And like I think in his serious roles, it's either too cartoonish to be considered like, oh yeah, that's another end of the range that he has. It's all just kind of like mid for me.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of him. I've seen what do we decide it was Isa Gonzalez.
Sure. Yeah.
In some things. I think she's fine, but I don't know what this character was. The whole thing just seemed kind of dumb. They just kept like dry humping at the like crime table, and no one had a problem with that. But they really had a problem with Baby Driver. Just, well, it's not like the dinner table, right? It's like anytime they like go to like, you know, the crime game planning team meeting, where he like literally does it with chalkboard like he's a football coach. Kevin Spacey is like, they're like crime headquarters is like a big room with like a chalkboard.
Yeah, it's like a warehouse or like a garage of some sort that is unoccupied and they've never been caught, and like no one seems to care about this giant warehouse where a lot of crime is being planned.
Yeah, and like Kevin Spacey's like this criminal, like sort of, you know, like a kingpin sort of thing. But he has like no staff. I feel like in like a normal movie, he has like guys or like a thing.
Bodyguards.
But it's just like, it's like as if I were trying to film this and got Kevin Spacey and like suddenly needed a location, like I could get a room in a chalkboard and fill it with nothing else and just like wouldn't have extras in the background. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. Like, I don't know what Kevin Spacey's deal in this is supposed to be. Because he's supposed to be, he's like, I could just, at some point he threatens him, he's like, I could just break your legs, and, you know, I wasn't even mad, he stole all my money with the stuff in the trunk, and, like, he's some kind of, like, crime boss, but, like, who does he boss around? He bosses around this not autistic child, I guess, this, you know, I don't know, ocularly impaired child? Not ocularly impaired, whatever.
Audio.
Yeah,
orally.
Sure. Orally, yeah.
So, he busts around this child, and then, I don't know, just, like, puts out, like, a crime Craigslist post every time he needs a few guys. Like, he doesn't have the top guys.
No.
His crews suck. He doesn't even seem to, like, buy, like, if I showed up to make this movie and, like, didn't have the masks or the guns, he's, like, sending them out to run errands. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's like, I need you guys to go pick up the crime masks and then go buy the guns from my crime contact. It's like, does he just have a Rolodex and that's his, like, whole thing? Like, I couldn't tell what kind of criminal he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be this, like, and he does this, like, I don't know if people like Kevin Spacey.
As an actor?
I mostly know him post, you know, allegations. So, I'm, like, not super, you know, into him. I know him as the guy in House of Cards, and this seems like he's doing that same thing where he's just like, I don't know, always talking about how like cool and planned out he is, and I'm just like, I don't buy this, because you have no guys. Like, you don't have any, like, there's nothing to like show his wealth either, or like his success. It's like, why are we in a fucking warehouse with a chalkboard? Like, what is it that you do here, Kevin Spacey? Other than just,
well,
like,
remember he buys them that dinner at Bacchanalia, the finest wining and dining in town. That's it. That's the only like non warehouse scene that Kevin Spacey's
in. I think that really is the only time they let him out of the warehouse, right?
Okay, that is a point that I need to make in this, is that his acting, like, the question that I had after rewatching this movie recently was, is Kevin Spacey a bad actor? Because, none of this movie that, no single second of this movie that he acted in was good. He was wooden the entire time. He had absolutely nothing on his... I know that he was trying to go for, like, oh, yeah, I'm, like, the low-key intimidating kind of crime boss, you know? I'm going to stay under the radar, but that even makes me... That just makes me all the more terrifying. It actually doesn't, because you just look like a wet idiot with your weird spray tan, or, like, it's like they took orange spray and put it in his hair. What was with the color of his hair? He was just not intimidating at all. He was not pulling off that, like, you know, under the radar intimidating guy.
No, yeah. And listen, I don't want to stand up for Kevin Spacey, but, like, every performance in this movie was so like devoid of charisma that I almost feel like it was stylistic. Because there's just no way for like people who are good in other stuff, or at least legally allowed to be in other movies, I guess is what I'll say for a lot of these actors, to like be in this movie and have it be like so devoid of anything interesting. Mm-hmm. And like a movie that like needs to be on the characters because the plot is like a real whatever thing. Like this, again, if we're going to have like a 5-minute music video of a coffee run, like this guy really needs to just like have impeccable swagger, and he doesn't. And then when he's flirting with, you know, the waitress at like the short skirt diner, like again, their like banter is just so strange and like alien that like it could have been like one of those like Twilight Zones where you find out they're both aliens and like neither of them know it. Like, I don't know. What's his name? John Hamm is like sort of playing a character, I guess, but like it doesn't make any sense. He's supposed to be this like, I don't know, really like cool, handsome guy. I never really got that. I think like people just like John Draper. His wife is like 20 years younger than him, which like wouldn't bother me, but he's like an old man and like I just don't know what they're doing at this point. And yeah, Kevin Spacey's just doing this like dry thing, like emotionless thing, and it's just like it's so dull. It's like it's not cool at all. Like, he doesn't seem intimidated. Like, when he threatens the guy, he's like, oh, I could break your leg. It's like, it's weird that, like, the guy, like, has some, like, loyalty to him, but he also threatens him for, like, no reason. He's like, I could break your leg, so you're going to do it where I break your legs, you're going to do what I say. And he's like, well, I don't want my legs. It's like, you think he'd just be like, you're physically going to break my legs? Do you have another guy?
You don't have guys.
Yeah, who's going to break my legs? Is it you, old man Spacey? Like, I don't understand what's going on here.
We, like, don't see Kevin Spacey, like, move his arms beyond, like, writing on the chalkboard. Other than that, his arms are down at his hips the entire time. So, yeah, no, he's really not that threatening of a person. Like, and, you know, I'm trying to think of, I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, but there are definitely examples of this type of character that he's going for in other movies. There's examples of characters who are playing so understated, but they just have this like just under the surface kind of like brooding, ominous kind of energy to them that you're like, oh my God, I'm fucking terrified of that character. And there are so many examples of that. And when it's done well, great. That's awesome. That's a fun twist. You know, like not all bad guys are big obnoxious bad guys. Some of them are people that you wouldn't necessarily suspect. And Kevin Spacey, as we've been saying, he does not pull that off even a little bit. Like, you have to do something to like to make us feel that you are a threatening presence, but he does nothing. Instead, he just stands there in what is the biggest suit that they could possibly find in the entire wardrobe department, and they stuffed him in it and spray painted his hair orange, and they were like, all right, Kevin, you don't need to go into makeup, just go ahead and get right in front of this camera here and action. And he looks like two kids inside of their dad's trench coat and like just the most deflated like balloon. I can't, every time he's in this movie or every time he walks on screen, I'm just like, what, why did nobody care about what Kevin Spacey was wearing in this movie? Everyone else, there's a ton of attention paid to what they're wearing.
So he's got connections to the police, right? Mm-hmm. Which is clearly well-funded, given their presence in every scene. So maybe that's why he doesn't need guys, because he's like a crooked cop. Is that who he's playing? Like his nephew is, I don't know if it's his nephew, the kid in the back whenever they're scoping out the USPS thing. I don't know if that's his son or his nephew.
He describes him as his nephew, I think.
I don't know if that was Baby's nephew, like if Baby is brother with the doc, like that's sort of familiar implication there. But anyway, like that kid's an 8-year-old, he's plotting crimes with good old Unc, you know? So it's like, this guy is clearly untouchable, can do whatever he wants in the city. At some point, you know, Jamie Foxx, unhinged criminal, recognizes a guy who busted him in 98. And, you know, instead of purchasing guns from these fellow crooked cops that Doc set him up with, Jamie Foxx insists on killing all of them. Which they all survive. I mean, these cops must be the worst shots in the fucking world. Or these criminals are just really good. I don't know. But yeah, I think that's, it's not well articulated in the movie, but I think that adds to and characterizes why Kevin Spacey can be, I don't know, sort of intimidating without being sort of personality or charismatically intimidating.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, yeah, that character totally would work in this movie. That would be, you know, not, you could knock that out of the park, but Kevin Spacey did not knock it out of the park. He, like, did not provide what is needed for that character to be a successful character, having an impact on the audience. He didn't do any of the things necessary for that. He didn't have any of that, like, looming, threatening kind of, like, undertones to the things he was saying. He didn't have, like, you know, I mean, I just, he didn't give any of that. He just, I mean, if he could have been sitting in a chair that entire movie, I bet you $1 million he would have done it. Like, he was basically sitting in a chair that entire movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, his performance was probably the worst. This character, like, they're all stock characters, but yeah. This is, like, the most stock character out of the characters. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, a boring version. I think the weird, when they go to case the post office, and he brings this kid along, who he says, I think he says is his nephew, or says is going to play the part of Baby Driver's nephew. I wasn't quite sure.
No, it's his nephew. It's his nephew.
Okay. And he says, oh, this will be less suspicious. There's nothing suspicious about going into a post office and buying stamps. You're allowed to do that. You don't need to bring a child. It's not fucking Legoland. I don't understand what's happening. I mean, maybe Kevin Spacey just had, like, a thing about this because he's not around, you know, allowed near children or whatever. But
what's
like,
a 21-year-old kid doing in the post office without a child?
Yeah, it's like, you can just go up to the teller and ask. Like, I've been to post offices. People are up to all kinds of wild stuff that none of it seems suspicious. Standing in line and making a purchase is, like, the thing you're supposed to do.
It's the least suspicious thing that you could do in a post office.
Yeah, bringing a child to, like, help you case the joint. A thing that, like, does not matter, given the entire thing is, like, storm the place and shoot everybody. Yeah. Threaten everybody. They're like, we need to know how many cameras there are. It's like, why? You just run in with masks and then run out. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's not like he needs to know where they, like, how many employees, how many customers are in the thing. It's
yeah,
like,
and like, that's the fun part of heist movies is, like, okay, yeah, they're doing all this recon before. They're finding out there's all these cameras. Why are they finding out all these cameras? Oh, it's because they're going to deactivate all of them. They're going to spray paint them. They're going to, like, get, you know, they're going to impersonate the tellers. They're going to blah, blah, blah. But, like, none of that happened. We never see the inside of a bank in this movie. So none of that whole scene had absolutely zero payoff. And that little kid doesn't even fucking come back either. So who cares?
But the little kid was fun, though.
Yeah, he was probably the best part of the movie. Yeah, because this movie is more of, like, a romance, right? It's...
That's what I was when I hadn't looked at it, but I was like, is this an action romance? But it wasn't listed. It's an action thriller. So hopefully you were thrilled.
But like the guy, I don't know. I think Ansel Elgort is just like not very charming in this.
No.
And was it Lily James who's Deborah? Yes. I think Deborah. Her character is just like nothing.
Correct.
Maybe because she likes this guy so much, I don't like her because I'm just like, what? Why? He's so boring. Like, how can I convince you of this, Deborah? And
the moment she comes on camera for the first time, I'm like, I'm rolling my eyes immediately. This is a female character who is clearly written by a man who has never encountered a human woman in his life.
Shots fired, Edgar.
It's, well, I don't know if he wrote it. He definitely directed it.
Oh, that's fair.
I think that he had an idea for this movie, and then he hired a bunch of writers.
He also wrote it.
He also what?
He also wrote the movie.
He did?
Yes.
Boo. Well, I mean, he did not do a good job of writing her character. I mean, she's a Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which, like, I know that... You know, we're getting away from Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but, like, I mean, that's what she is. Like, she has absolutely no substance to her whatsoever. And the minute she walks on screen, the minute she comes into the bar or the diner and she's like, bah, 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 bah. I'm like, ugh, what is that that she's doing with her voice, first of all? And then second of all, the conversation they have is so cringy from start to finish. It's like Gilmore Girls on crack, on like in an upside down universe where, I mean, it's just so painful. I hate that scene. And every scene that she's in after that is just, it's bad. It's bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the central romance of the movie, I think, just does not work at all for me.
No.
Which is what the entire movie is about.
Yeah.
Because, like, are there diners where there's just, like, hot waitresses just waiting for some guy to come sweep them away into a life of... She doesn't even get to go on the crime. It's not like she, like, likes the danger of the crime or anything. She just kind of, like, decides this guy who doesn't talk and is definitely not autistic, as the movie tells us, but is, like, a little bit something, it seems like, is just, like, a guy she needs to follow forever, like, into anything and run away from it all.
He does absolutely nothing to, like, entice her in. All she does, she comes up to his table and she's immediately flirting with him. She's immediately just, like, slobbering all over him. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God, look how cute and charming I am. I'm so quirky. I'm such a manic pixie dream girl. It's not 2004. This isn't Garden State. Like, you can't – that it's been done. It is so – overplayed, this, like, this character that she's doing.
Wait, what's Manic Pixie Dream Girl?
Okay, so Manic Pixie, it's like a phrase that is probably, like, deployed, like, a little bit too often, which I think is, like, mostly from Garden State, but it's mostly, like, a Zooey Deschanel character, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or,
Sorna Spacey?
What?
No pun intended?
It's a female character who's, like, pretty much only purpose in the movie is to, like, on a base level, their only purpose in the movie is to further the emotional development of the main male protagonist.
Okay.
And, like, they really just, they tend to be, like, kind of quirky and not like other girls, and like have you seen Garden State?
I haven't seen Garden State.
I don't think I have.
All right, folks.
I don't know. They're usually like, yeah, they're like a not other girls, quirky. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, you know, guys, dreamer girl.
I mean, you said call her a dream girl. Okay, so just sign us someone who's kooky, who has like big grand ideas. And, you know, maybe wants to be a hippie, like yearns for the 60s.
It's not like a particular, like, 60s thing. It's just like, I don't know.
Free-spirited?
Yeah, she's like fun and like drags the guy along on these like quirky things. And is just like trying to like bring all this fun into his life. And you're just like,
yeah. Okay.
Like, why? Yeah. Why is like? Does this? What did this woman do yesterday before she met this man? Was she just like sitting here?
Yeah.
And we learn like nothing about her life outside of this. So it's like she just like wants to run away from it all for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what is she running away from?
Yeah, we don't know. Like, we have no idea. And like, you know, Edgar Wright says, who fucking cares? Not me, certainly not. We learn absolutely nothing about her. The only thing that we do know about her is that apparently she has so little going on in her life that she is willing to wait 5 years for a man to get out of jail she's known at that point, she has actually spent maybe 24 solid hours with him, and she waits 5 years for him to get out of jail.
Yeah, they don't spend that much time together, right?
No, they're instantly in love. It's love at first sight for them.
They, like, go on a laundry date, I guess.
They go on a laundry date, they go to Bacchanalia, the finest wine and dining, the whatever. I hate that line so much.
It would make more sense if, like, we saw that her life kind of sucked or something.
Right.
But, like, the coffee shop seems completely normal. She has, like, friends there. Mm-hmm. And, well, I mean,
for some reason, the cook hates her. Is the cook the owner?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's Bo.
Okay. Yeah, he's just like, he's also unnecessarily aggressive toward her. So it seems that maybe that's one more thing they have in common. Not only are they both infatuated by all sorts of music, they're both, you know, hated by their coworkers.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so in fairness, I talk about this a lot, but like, people complain that, like, you know, about this type of character and how this woman is written really poorly. And that's true. But like, the men in this movie are also written so poorly.
Correct.
That I think it might just be an overall issue. Because, yeah, like, everyone's just kind of an... I mean, it is funny that she has a friend at the diner. The only thing they talk about is Baby Driver and his dead mother. And, like, the backstory of Baby Driver we find out from these two diner waitresses who have nothing else going on in their life. And I get that. That's fine. Yeah, like, I don't know. She's, like, the actress is, like, cute and charming. And you could definitely see this working. If this is sort of like an Anne Hathaway, James Franco at like the Oscars when he was just giving her nothing to work off of. I mean, this guy, I think, just like didn't like this whole movie rests on this guy's like performance.
Yeah.
And I think he just didn't give a great one.
Well, yeah. And it's kind of like the same thing as Kevin Spacey. It's like if you guys were going for this specific type of character who is so low key, but still is intriguing. I mean, both of them failed. Like you can't just drink a glass of cold white milk and be like, yeah, that was it. That's all I did. That's what they were, two tall glasses of milk, both of them, and they brought nothing to those characters, even a little bit. The one moment where we get a little bit of personality from Baby is when he's doing the dancing with his foster dad, which, like, okay, yeah, we get it. Like, he's a good guy. Like, I don't know. That just felt so, like, in your face. But other than that, there was no middle ground between, like, jumping around, dancing, swinging around, making peanut butter sandwiches, all, you know, whatever. There was no middle ground between that and then absolutely nothing that he was giving.
Yeah, no, I mean, he doesn't have a character either. It feels like he like likes making remixes of recordings of the crime headquarters, which gets him in trouble later.
Mm-hmm.
But like, does he? It's not like a movie where he has like a dream of being a music producer or something. Mm-hmm. He just like has a weird hobby of only making remixes of like crimes, I guess, and like keeping a ton of evidence for some reason. And then they like find out and get really mad at him, and it's kind of like, yeah, this is weird that you're recording us every time we plan a crime.
Yeah, but they don't kill him after they discover this, because like, well, yeah, let's just do the heist though. They don't kill him, weirdly, after they find out that he's been recording. And, like, the guy, the Asian guy that they killed at the beginning, he left his gun behind and they shot him. And Baby Driver's literally been recording all of their conversations for years, decades, possibly. And they're just like, oh, baby, you little scamp. How dare you?
No, I think they probably planned to kill him, but they weren't forthright with that plan at the beginning of the heist, right? So, Doc turns around and he's like, nope, fucking deal's off, just go home. And I think at that point, Doc is wrestling with the fact that he's going to have to kill Baby because he's been recording him. But instead, Baby realizes, he's like, oh, if I don't go through with this heist, or at least convince these people that I'm going through with this heist, then I'm probably going to be dead in like 30 to 45 minutes. So I better convince them, like, overwhelmingly that I want to participate in this one last heist, and that'll at least buy me another 12 hours of life. And then, you know, maybe we can just enter a shootout, or I could fuck up the heist and try to get away from all these criminals at that point.
Yeah, he could use his driving skills. Yeah, no, definitely. It could be a lot of things. None of it's like interesting. It's weird that like he's like in debt to Kevin Spacey, and then does his one last job, then is a pizza delivery man for one night, and then Kevin Spacey comes and says, "Actually, you have to do one more last job." And it's like, why are there two things? Like, he thought he was out, but didn't even like care about being out. And then they're like, no, you're not actually out. It's like, we could have cut a good 15 minutes out of the movie if this was just the last job.
Right, you know? Right. Like, like, why did we have to have that scene of him doing the pizza guy thing? That never goes anywhere. That doesn't add anything to Ansel Elgort's like rise in this movie. Like, we don't care about Baby more because he delivered pizzas and he was really good at it for one night. That whole thing was pointless. It could have just been Kevin Spacey is just saying, you got to come back for all these heists. I don't care that you're all paid up. Like, you owe me in interest or whatever, you know? And also, like, you're right. It was like one day. It was literally one day. And he's now got a brand new heist all ready to go, right? Like, prepared and planned and everything.
Yeah,
don't these things take months?
I'm not sure.
Impossible to say. I mean, I think they thought it was just way funnier when he shows up and the guy is like, wow, that was a really fast pizza delivery. And he's like, yep, I'm a baby driver. Baby driver at your service. Like, you know? Like, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know.
He was trying to be Jesse Eisenberg from 30 Minutes or Less.
You still haven't cooked the pizza. You know? It's not like it's all drive time. It's like, even if it doesn't matter, like, what is he speeding through the city to get them their pizza?
He's driving like a getaway driver as a pizza driver, and he's not arrested for it because look how cute and, you know, just bland he is.
I don't even know why he speeds away from the crime scene. The first crime scene, they gun it away. We see a cop going the other direction, and like, oh shit, the car gunning away might be the car I'm looking for. And then he turns around and chases them. It seems like they just like, in the fucking Dark Knight, when the Joker like gets in the school bus, he's not the one school bus gunning it down the road while the other, he just gets in the line with all the other school buses. It's like, no one was looking for that car. They didn't know what car was the getaway car. I don't know. Doesn't matter. So yeah, then they do the post office heist to get, what were they trying to get?
I don't know.
Money orders or something.
Money orders. Yeah.
And he's like, I'll give you all the money orders. I just want to be with my diner waitress, Debra. Who's the best? It has personality traits, I'm sure. You know, and like,
and I intend to find out what they are.
Yeah, like, is that the whole thing? Was he was just like, I know this girl has a personality deep down, and we'll explore that in the next movie. Like, I don't know. She like also likes listening to listen. I like music as much as the next guy, but like that's because everyone likes music, you know. Like, liking music isn't this, like, super quirky thing that only, you know, getaway drivers and diner waitresses do. It's like, everyone likes to put on music. And also, stop sharing your headphones with everybody. It's fucking weird. Like, it was like, it wasn't just the girl. It was, like, also John Hamm and him would share headphones. Yeah. It was like, clean these off or something. Like, give everyone their own pair. You have 45 pairs of sunglasses, but just sticking these things in everybody's ears.
A splitter never crossed his mind.
They've been in his ears for 72 hours, and John Hamm just pulls it out, and there was probably just like a line of earwax just pulling away from his ear.
The thing that pissed me off about the earbuds, whenever they're in the laundromat, is erratic manic pixie girl. What was her? Manic pixie dream girl. She's like dancing around. She's like luring him around the laundromat while they're sharing headphones, and he's probably just like chasing her, like, can you please stop fucking dancing and twirling around? This is impossible for me to share music with you. Are you trying to rip it out of my ear? And she's just like, I don't know, on a coke bender? Who fucking knows?
That point that you made, Monica, about like, it's not like unique or cool that like, oh my god, wow, finally I meet someone who also likes music. Amazing. That makes me so mad. Like, anytime I see that, that is such a trope that I see in so many movies where it's just like, yeah, I'm different. I'm different than most people. You wouldn't find another girl who likes music. Ugh, I know. I'm so weird. Give me a break.
Well, he told her the only other song that has Debra in it. You know? He found her song. Like a zebra.
He was like, oh shit, what was I just about to say? I lost it. Never mind. Keep going.
It's by Trex, you know? And she's like, you mean T-Rex? Like,
he was like, yeah, the song Debra. And she's like, oh yeah, the Beck one? Like, shut up. Like, you're not cool because you know who Beck is. Shut up.
Yeah, just like...
The Beck one?
I just feel like this thing where, like, I don't know. It would have been more interesting if, like, his music was more of a part of it. But just, like, having, like, knowing other people's music is just, like, that's just a thing. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I don't think just being a fan of someone else's work is going to make you interesting.
Well, yeah, he's not a musical genius. He's not a musical genius at all. We hear his little mixtapes, and it's terrible.
Fucking horrible.
Awful.
So we understand why why she loves him, right? Because it's pretty easy. Seems she'll fall head over heels in love with anyone, and she's like a nothing character, and it's not really fleshed out. I have a theory for why he's in love with her. Because after they go on the date, she's like, hey, you want to come upstairs and have some coffee or whatever? I make a mean cup of coffee. And then she immediately follows that up with, I mean, I don't. I make terrible coffee. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of thinking maybe her euphemism there was like, I'm real good at fucking. And I actually make terrible drinkable coffee, despite the fact that I'm a diner waitress. I'm just really good at sex. So maybe that's what intrigues him. And he's like, you know what? I need to get to the bottom of this. She said she's really good. And I believe her.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
It could be that. I mean, it could just be because, I don't know. I mean, listen, the diner uniforms, costumes, I mean, probably would have been enough. It takes much more than that.
Why are those skirts this so short?
This movie has no sex appeal whatsoever. Nothing about this movie is like, oh yeah, this was a fun movie. It was fun to watch. No, none of it. None of it. Because of who was playing the other side of the romantic interest. Like, you know, Lily James, I think she probably did the best she could with the material that she was given, but it was still just like nauseatingly annoying. But then to be working off of, you know, Baby, that guy, he's giving you nothing. He's giving you nothing. What are you supposed to do with that?
I think he had a lot of goodwill from Fault in Our Stars, and maybe among younger generations, he's like a heartthrob. That's why I said he's a heartthrob in the description, because there's clearly something I don't see, and Chloe doesn't see it either. I don't think Jess sees it, but I think maybe the youths do.
Was the director just saying, like, give me less? Give me, like, do absolutely nothing. Like you're showing way too much chemistry.
Let's bladder, guys. Yeah. Bladder.
Yeah. There's this moment when they first kiss in the car, where, like, it's just the most saltine kiss that I've ever seen in any movie. It's so boring and dumb. And she, when they break away from this kiss, the look on her face is like, is so over the top. Like, wow. Oh my God. It's like, she put a lot into that moment. She put 200% more into her reaction after the kiss than either of them put into the actual kiss itself.
Look, I'm glad, you know, you guys, it sounds like you agree with my description and the summary that she's, you know, somewhat slutty. Because no, I think that feeds right into it.
I don't think she's slutty.
I think she picks up guys at the diner and gives her goo-goo eyes and is just like, come upstairs, I make coffee.
I don't think that's supported by the text of the movie.
I'm off base here. Are you serious?
I just don't think it's in the movie. I think he had more romantic chemistry with his, I guess, stepdad when they're dancing around the apartment. Like, that was that scene had a little bit of charm to it. It was like, oh, these guys are having fun together. You know?
Well, like, I think
that was one of the scenes where he was actually giving something in his performance. That was one of the only scenes where he's doing that. Everywhere else, he's giving nothing.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't make him and her more fun together.
Because
they could.
Yeah, they could, but that would involve more effort in the writer's room. And they were like, you know, we got to get this. We got to cut. We got to print. We got to get this out the door.
Just have them, like, dance around and do whatever. Like, I don't know. Just him dancing around with the guy is fun. But they're just sitting in the diner and they're like, ooh, what if we listen to this song? And you're like, oh my God. And they're like, oh, but you haven't heard this other song. It's like, we've heard all the fucking songs. Like, it's on shuffle. It doesn't matter. Like, I don't know.
If you had your magic wand, would you cut all of the foster dad scenes out? Like, do you think that relationship isn't worth it?
I think maybe it overshadows the romantic lead. You know, people like want these two to end up together instead of the girl and the guy. Maybe even the girl and the stepdad. Let's see them in a room together. See if they have some chemistry.
I don't think that they should have cut out the thing with the stepdad. I think that it could have been fleshed out more, and like, yeah, let's put Lily James and the stepdad in, or it's not stepdad, it's foster dad. Put them all in a room together and see them like laughing and having fun and eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And like, that would have added some warmth to this movie that was what the foster dad added, was some warmth and some like personality to Ansel Elgort's, you know, dry toast performance. But like, they could have put Lily James in a room with him and like made a fun little like heartwarming scene with that. They could have expanded that to round out every single character in this movie, or every single main character in this movie, but they didn't, and it was too little of the father thing.
I don't know that it would have worked, because she's a manic pixie girl, right? And he's a mute who does sign language. So like,
what I'm saying is they could have made her not a manic pixie dream girl. They could have given her some depth. Like, if she meets up with him and like, maybe she's nervous about like being around a deaf person and she doesn't know how to treat him or something, but then like Ansel Elgort teaches her that it's fine, he's just like everyone else, you just have to be funny and whatever, blah blah blah, you know. Like, it could have been nice moments from both of those characters. It could have shown who they are besides just the nothing.
I think part of what adds to the allure for him is the fact that he's looking for a quick escape. So if he meets somebody who's looking to just head west on 20 with no plan and figure it out on the way, like, that is alluring to him, because he doesn't have many ties and he just wants to get out of the criminal game. So as soon as he meets her, he like expresses interest, then he realizes he's in too deep and he's like, okay, this is my plan A. Let's hook up with this girl. She's really good at sex. We'll head west on 20 and just bang.
But he does have ties to his stepdad. That doesn't matter. But they could have, like, yeah, they could have put them together and we could have found out more about her. Or they could have spoken about anything. Like, they have scenes, like, him, Ansel Elgort, and
Joe.
The girl. What's her name? Deborah.
Deborah.
They have scenes together. They just don't talk about anything. They talk about his backstory a lot. It's like, yes, we know. He's got a dead mom. He likes music. Uh-huh. The whole thing. It's the whole thing. You know? Like, nothing. Yeah. She has nothing. She spawned in as soon as he walked into the diner.
Correct. There was no before baby for Lily James in this movie. There was nothing.
Well, I think whenever he goes to get the coffee in the second scene after the first heist, he sees her walking around the streets of Atlanta near the headquarters of the criminal activity.
Yeah.
And he expresses interest in her. So maybe he's had his eye on her for a while. And he just thinks she's really beautiful.
No, the first time she walks into the diner and she's baby.
That's her first time on screen.
No, I know. But I'm saying that's I don't
a deal
think
breaker.
He's like, I don't I don't think he's like, I don't know. I think that's the second time that he's seen her. The first time was outside the coffee shop.
I thought he had a conversation with Joe after he spotted her outside of the coffee shop.
No. So he spots her outside the coffee shop right before he orders the four coffees for the original heist for the Punisher. That doesn't go anywhere. He just sees her and she's like walking by extremely flamboyantly with her hair like flying all over the place because she's just so whimsical and so quirky and she just loves music so much.
I don't know what are they, their crime headquarters looks like. It's like an abandoned bank or something.
Is it?
I don't know. It has like one of those revolving doors. It looks like it could be.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they stole like hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's wild. I don't know. This character is like the most dimly written character ever. Like, it's such so much nothing.
Yeah, she's only a catalyst for the movie to proceed.
But he's just
exactly.
So boring.
That's the definition of Manic Pixie Dream Girl, is like their only function is to like further the plot of the dude.
Yeah, I think it's a great characterization.
But she doesn't really even, like, bring any fun stuff into his life, though.
Right.
You know, like, normally I feel like with this type of character, you'd, like, have the girl, but she'd have, like, her own set of quirks. And she'd, like, you know, out-quirk him, and he'd be like, oh, this girl, but she's fine, I don't know, I'll go along with it, even though I'm a little embarrassed. But she just has nothing. She's just like, well, I'm going to laundry, and he's like, let's do laundry, listen to music. Like, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't know, she had so little. Then he takes her out to dinner at just like a nice restaurant, and they just go to dinner. It's not like, she's not like, I'll show you a secret spot. He's like, I heard about this from John Hamm, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing unique about their date at all. It's not like, oh my god, wow, they're having a really great time. They did something really fun and interesting. They went to a fancy dinner at like a basic ass looking restaurant, like, and nothing really happened there except he drank a cranberry juice and she had wine, and like nothing happened at this restaurant except they had a basic ass dinner. Like, that's it. Although, I guess Kevin Spacey does mention the foie gras, which, like, is it the 80s? Nobody orders foie gras anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like this character.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, the writing is so lazy. I'm offended by how lazy it was.
And it's, like, not a short movie. Like, it's almost 2 hours. It's like they could have, like, they took their time. Again, we spent a 5-minute coffee run. It's like we could have just used all that time for something with her.
Did I cut out? Or...
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. I can hear you now.
So
cut out for a second there.
I don't know. And then I guess we could, the plot of the movie, I guess, kicks in at some point where John Bernthal's replacement comes in, and he's played by Jamie Foxx. Who is, like, even more aggressive and unhinged.
Goes on a monologue for, like, a minute and a half.
About, like, how unhinged he is.
Yep.
I'm the mentally unstable one. That role's taken. Ha 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 ha. Okay.
And then they're, like, is it when they're leaving one of the crimes? Oh, no, when they're... Okay. They get into a shootout. This is after the shootout, right? Because they get into a shootout with the police, who are crooked cops who are selling them guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the butcher, who speaks about guns in terms of cuts of meat of a pig.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, because if they're, like, the crooked cops, are they worried about, like, other cops listening in on them for their crooked copping?
Why do they need to use...
Also, one of the reasons he realizes, he said he recognizes a guy, but also they bring the guns in crates marked APD.
I know.
So it's like, if I was a crooked cop, I wouldn't, like... be so lazy as to, like, not rebox my guns that I'm selling illegally, but then be like, oh, what if there's surveillance? Like, they might be listening, so I'll sell you a leg of, I don't know, semi-auto for, you know, 3 cuts of pork or whatever the fuck they were talking about. But, like, in the meantime, they're just walking around with a bunch of guns in the boxes they got out of, what, the evidence room? Like, I don't... what the fuck is happening here? And then Kevin Spacey's like, yes, they were my cops. I just didn't tell you, because... I knew you'd be wary of cops being unstable criminals, but, like, I didn't. Why not just say they're dirty cops? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're cops on my payroll. Like, be responsible. You're sending them out there. Be responsible. Give them all the information that they need, and the information that they need is these people are cops. You know.
Yeah.
It's not like that was just like, oh, well, you know, they all have blue eyes. No, this is actually crucial information that they should have known, and it's, you know, frankly, Bats was in the right.
Yeah, so I don't know. That I don't know why any of that happened. This is more of Kevin Spacey's character just, like, not making a ton of sense.
Correct.
Because
he's lazy.
He's supposed to be, like, this, like, mastermind, but everything just keeps getting fucked up.
Everything is lazy that they all do in this movie. Lazy.
And then they have to, like, stop at the diner. Because Batch is like, I really want to go to this random diner that you drove. I don't know why you drove past the diner. And then Batch, like, tries to kill her to avoid paying.
like for no reason at all. He just like stands up and pulls out his gun. Like, okay,
just what? Loves
why?
Homicides. Like, you could have just like dined and dashed. That's also a crime. But isn't like it wasn't like he was trying to leave and she stopped him and he was like, now I'm gonna murder her. He was just like, yeah. Oh, 1 second, let me go back and leave a murder. You
she
know.
Did- absolutely nothing. And so like that was part of why that scene sucked so bad, is because it was like, well, wait, what, why did we go from 0 to 100 here?
Oh, lazy. No, that scene, it's one of my least favorites. I mean, if it, not only can you just drive in a way that doesn't go past the diner that has the only like love interest that you ever had, right? Just don't drive past that diner. But if you do, right, and this is the second instance where baby's terrible at thinking on his feet. We get it a little earlier at the USPS store, whenever the person's just like, is this your son? And he's like, yeah, sure. I don't know. It's just some fucking kid I know. I don't know. No, it's a family friend. I'm just watching him. I'm a fucking babysitter. Like, say anything other than,
it's
yes,
way less suspicious if you have an unrelated kid whose name you don't know. Like,
exactly.
Like, no, I'm just watching him. Yeah. Move on. Like, you fucking idiot. Okay, so then right. Bats is like, yeah. No, stop at that diner. And baby's just like, nah, that place sucks, man. I don't like it. And Bats is like, I'm fucking hungry. What you say? You tell me no? And why can't he just say, like, dude, we were just in a fucking shootout, and I'm a little startled. I just want to get back to, like, safety. I don't want to stop at a fucking diner. Can we please just, like, head down the fucking... And while he's saying that, Bats could probably be like, okay, maybe we won't turn around. You know, we won't go to that diner. We'll just keep on going. Maybe we'll hit up a McDonald's on the way, you know?
It's not like he's like in love with both. Just don't stop. Just drive the car. It doesn't matter.
Just keep fucking going.
Just go.
Unreal. But it needed to move the plot along, and that's why it fucking happened. So
did it, though? Like,
I think it feeds into Bats's intuition, right? So earlier, you know, you guys were harping on the fact that they're making out Isaac Gonzalez and John Hamm. But I think that indicates to Bats... like their relationship. And he's like, he summarizes, so he's like, oh, you're a Wall Street guy and you were a stripper and you probably had a different family. Like, he just sums up their life. Like, he's pretty intuitive, right? And I think it's a characterization of Bats to be unhinged, but he's also fairly intuitive and at reading people.
Yeah.
And that's how he uncovers the fact that baby is lying to him the first time and the second time. And that he, you know, it's a problem that they're in this diner. So I didn't like it, but that's what, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I hear that, like, the thing about Bats being intuitive. But then what do we do with that information? Like,
it provides a reason for baby to have conflict with the criminal crew, you know? That's what, and it culminates in tragedy.
Like, they
manufacture
conflict with him like 5 other times. It's not like we needed a reason. It's not like they like stand in opposition on some like. It's just like one guy's unhinged, and he could be unhinged for any number of reasons. Like, the reason they get mad at him is he tries to like escape, and they catch him. I guess they like know he's gonna do it, and they get him and beat him up. And
somehow they get to the garage before he does. Somehow that doesn't make any sense, because when he left, they were all sleeping. It doesn't make sense. But
I think that's after they found the recorder, though. So he was fully
right. So
in at that point.
They had time to loot through his stuff and then appear in front of his car before he left the garage.
Yeah, they do some like jump scaring, and they kidnap Joseph. And
yeah, they managed to do all that.
And then they. Are convinced of his innocence because they hear the
terrible music.
I guess like the mixed the mixtapes, I guess, or like the remixes he makes of their discussions.
That scene was actually very funny, because the way that they all reacted to his music was exactly the way I reacted to it, which was like, this is awful.
It's like, yeah, I don't.
Oh, there was one other line that I actually really did like, and it was a Kevin Spacey line, and it's when he said, he's like, what did he say? Oh, he said, don't feed me any more lines from Monsters, Inc. Pisses me off. That was funny. I like that.
I don't remember that. I don't know enough about Monsters, Inc. to know what line that would be.
You and I are a team.
Yeah, like or something. Something about some weird line that like I don't know from Monsters, Inc. But it was I don't know. I thought that his delivery of that was actually kind of funny. But that was it. That was the one singular line in the movie that I thought he did well.
There's a point where he like draws the like the diagram of the thing, and it feels like he's like really proud of himself afterwards. Yeah. And, like, that could have been his character as a guy who like I don't know. It's like, but they just made him like this standard. Like I don't know if he was supposed to be pretending to be this badass guy, but since they seem to be like listening, but it would have made more sense if he was just like I don't know a different type of thing and was more fun.
Yeah.
But
right. Well, exactly. It would have been better if there was something to his character other than complete woodenness.
Yeah, like anything would have been good. So then they like, so then they do the post office robbery, right?
Uh-huh.
And Bats like kills a guy. And then Baby just impales him on some like a beam.
Like yeah, rebar hanging off the back of a truck.
Baby's mad that he killed the security guard for no reason.
Right. And then they all flee, and then Darling is killed, right?
Yeah.
And then John Hamm just, like, chases him down? Like, Terminator style, basically?
Yeah. He, like, goes to the diner knowing that Baby's probably going to go there because of Deborah or whatever. Because they found the one tape that was called Deborah, and that's how they figured out that Deborah's a known entity.
Oh, yeah, because she was wearing her name tag that day.
Uh-huh, right, yeah.
They should have died so many times before that. It's insane. Like, Baby, whenever he's in the butcher gun battle scene, there's a guy standing over top of him, shooting a pistol at him as Baby's, like, I don't know, breakdancing away from these bullets? He's doing, like, a gymnastics floor routine in order to evade gunfire. It's just the most impressive thing I've ever seen. And then, you know, Bats comes in, saves the day, and shoots the guy. But yeah, that like these cops are just the worst shots. Every cop in the city. That's why they need so many of them. You just got to send more bullets downrange.
I mean, I think that is sort of true to life. If you look at like statistics, but
I mean, don't they go to literal academy for that?
Yeah, I think it's like hard to shoot moving targets, though.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't do a lot of gun stuff.
But Buddy and Isaac Gonzalez or Darling, they just like stand still. They're just like,
well, she gets shot though.
Yeah, okay.
And then
well, good.
Yeah, so then I don't know, he goes to Doc and then Doc is like feels bad. It would have made more sense if him and Doc had like more of a friendship and that's why they were in rather than like I feel like the threat he makes is like the worst part of the movie cuz that's like a different thing. If it's like a thing where Doc was like sort of his mentor and got him into this and he's trying to get out, I think that works so much better than if Doc's like threatening him. I don't know why they didn't do that. Cause Doc like blackmails him and you could see that like, I don't know, they could make that a little bit different. And instead he was like, they had some like affection for each other. And then, you know, there could still be a sense of betrayal when he thinks he's informing on him or he's going to leave and he gets mad. But like, it's weird that there's like two different things going on at once.
Yes.
But then Doc, like, saves them from, the dirty cops, more dirty cops.
He, like, is going to help them escape or whatever. And, like, you're right. There should have been more to the two of them that would have made this so much more interesting. It would have been kind of, like, cute if Doc was like, oh, I've always felt like you were me when I was younger. Or, like, I want to be a father to you or whatever, blah, blah, blah. That would have been like, okay, well, that's compelling. Now I kind of give one singular shit about some characters in this movie. But that's the problem is that like, I didn't care about any of them. Like I would not have been sad if any of those characters died. I felt nothing.
Well, they do most, but like, and like
yeah,
Kevin Spacey.
I'm talking about like Baby. Baby died? No, fine. I don't care. Bye.
Yeah. I mean, any of them could have, except Joe. Joe was I felt bad. You know, he seemed like a tough ride over there, but like, at the beginning of the movie, when John Bernthal, who I'm sure has a name, is like harassing him, Kevin Spacey's the one who, like, defends him. So, like, Kevin Spacey goes from, like, on his side to threatening him to, like, even more mad at him to, like, then saving him again and, like, sacrificing himself to save him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a complete 180. The direction he was going was more and more mad, and then he's willing to lay down his life for baby. It didn't add up.
Yeah, it seemed like such a weird turn at the end where it's like, I guess we don't know anything about this character, but he doesn't seem to have any values. So it's weird when he's just like, okay, yeah, I guess, I don't know, you deserve it. Like, go on the run. Like, their relationship was nothing before that. And then Buddy catches them and deafens baby just to be kind of a douchebag, I guess sort of like an ironic punishment.
He wanted to take away the one thing that he loved, which was music.
He probably could have shot the girl who was with him.
Right. Yeah.
I think that was his next bullet.
That was his next thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. He said, I wish you could hear her scream.
Oh, he did say that.
Yeah. But like, you know, yeah, it's the whole Kevin Spacey thing. They could have injected some of those elements of like he's protective of baby, but they didn't. We only saw that in action. There was no like build up to any of that. It was only just pure like one moment of like, wait, what the fuck? And that's why it felt so out of place. All of the heart of this movie felt out of place because there was no, I don't know, there wasn't any context to any of it.
Yeah, it's sort of weird that this movie has like several villains, because at different points, like Kevin Spacey and, I mean, John Barenthal's Bailey, but Buddy's the ultimate villain, I guess. But Bats is sort of like the second act villain for a lot of it. It's like there's all these different villains who, like, I guess loosely connected, but like the conflict is all different things.
Yeah.
And then I don't think John Hamm is like really this type of character either. I don't know. I think he was not well cast for this. And then they just kill him. They kill John Hamm. And then they try to escape and they get caught because there's just a roadblock, which must have been
the only road out of town.
Yeah, must have been pretty far out because like it seemed like she was driving while he was unconscious or something, right?
Yep, and they made it out to rural Georgia. And then got stopped by a cop roadblock somehow.
Yeah.
Again, like 100 cops.
And now at this point, she's ready to like ram the barricade. And he has to be like, no, Deborah, let's not kill more cops. Like,
yeah. Deborah, who 24 hours ago was just like living a very simple, normal life as a diner waitress and had absolutely no criminal background. But now all of a sudden she's like, let's kill these cops.
It would have been like more interesting if she like seemed to love the life of crime and we like saw that earlier or something. Not that would have been better.
Again, any sort of like signs of life from this character would have been appreciated.
Yeah, but nothing. Yeah. The only thing she likes is music and trying to kill cops, I guess, at the end. So
making bad coffee.
Yeah, making it. It's weird that she, it's like, is that supposed to make her more interesting that she, like, doesn't know how to cook coffee after working at a diner?
It's like they were going for a quirky thing about her. It's like, oh, this is a woman who can't make coffee. Like, and then, but that, like, didn't go anywhere. It didn't land. It wasn't funny. It was just stupid.
I mean, she follows that up with, because he's like, no, I got to get back to the office or whatever. She follows it up with, well, I'm here for you when you're ready. Like, I think she's just, you know, trying to convey that she puts out on a first date and that she'll be a pretty good, you know.
Going back to this, Marshall, I'm not sure to agree in any way.
Yeah, like,
did you not watch the same scenes? Like, watch it again.
Your whole thing is that she's like some promiscuous diner.
Yeah.
I think she's just madly in love with this one specific guy for, again, no reason.
Well, but he took him to the baccalaureate. He took her to the baccalaureate.
Yeah, but she was sort of in love at first sight, though.
You're divining like a lot of sexual tension or undertone in this movie, and I said this earlier, and I still stand by it. There is absolutely no sexual like anything in this movie.
Yeah, it really
not
is
sexy, even a little bit.
One of the least sexy movies ever.
I don't think
it has to be.
No, it doesn't have to. I don't care. But also, like the fact, thank you picking up on all these sexual undertones from like two of the most bland performances I've ever seen in my life. I'm not picking up that same drift.
Yeah. But like usually if you have a movie that's sort of like about being cool, mm-hmm. and also is just has a cast full of like attractive people, which I think this movie does.
Yeah.
Like there'll just be some kind of innate sexiness.
Sure.
And this movie just like kills it off. Like it's an experiment. You know?
How unsexy can we make these people?
Yeah.
John Hamm, who is like classically like a handsome man. His whole thing is not sexy, even a little bit. It's gross.
Yeah, his character in 30 Rock is he's supposed to be like so handsome it like affects yeah. his life.
Yeah.
You know? I assume yeah, this people... diner waitress who's like we have a lot of shots of her like thighs. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a very thigh heavy performance. And still they're just like, no, like there's nothing there.
No.
You know?
No, there's not a single moment in this movie where I was like, well, that's fun. That's fun and sexy. No, none of it.
He's so he's dressed like Han Solo for most of the movie.
Correct.
For some reason.
Gray hoodie with a black vest?
Yeah, he's wearing like the Han Solo vest. Oh, no. And he's just I don't know. He's the worst.
And Kevin Spacey's wearing the most ill-fitting suit, again, that they could possibly find in the entire wardrobe department.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, the John Hamm and Darling are just always making out in every yeah. scene, and it's just like, still not an ounce of sexuality in any of this.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And like, I don't know, and I think, like, I don't know, she, like, her performance is fine, but like, I feel like she's at least partially there for her looks, and like, still, it's just like, what is going on in this movie? Doesn't matter. And then the crazy part of the movie, like you alluded to earlier, is they go to court and then he has like 40 character witnesses like, yes, he committed a lot of dangerous crimes and many, many people died. But like he gave me my purse back after he carjacked me in a really traumatic way. And then the lady's like, yes, he like robbed us and his like accomplice shot my coworker. But like it seemed like he didn't want me in particular to die. And then his foster dad's like, yeah, you know, he was forced into this through some backstory that I'm, like, not really aware of, I don't think. But, like, knowing what I know about him, that he's a dangerous criminal, like, that he's a real good kid. And they're like, okay, so you get 25 years but parole after 5, and there's 21 counts. It's like 10 of those counts, I mean, first of all, they did 45 robberies. Judging from all the evidence we have, from the money stash, from the tapes. Again, it's all on fucking tape. Doesn't matter. There's at least, what, 2 or 3 felony murders that we see on screen?
Mm-hmm.
Because JD and Bats and the security guard are all killed?
Yeah.
Oh, they kill one more of the armored truck, I think.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, not the hero in the truck, but I think initially there's a guy left bloody on the ground.
That's why that heist with Bats goes so bad, is because Baby Driver is just so, you know, appalled and he's clutching his pearls about the murder.
Yeah, he's really pro-clutchy about, like, these deaths.
Right.
But then also all his accomplices, so I guess Ilya, but Darling and Buddy both die. I guess he kills Buddy. Although they have him, like, shoot him and then have him fall.
Yeah,
as if like, to like absolve him somehow. It's like you're allowed to kill the dangerous criminal trying to murder you and
I think
your girlfriend in front of you.
Before that, he shot him in the chest, but why didn't he just shoot him in the head?
I don't know if people have pinpointed. My point is like it seemed like the movie like wanted to like make it seem like, oh well, you know, he's a good guy. He wouldn't murder anybody on purpose. It's like, but you're allowed to murder John Hamm in this scenario. Like you're still a good guy. He was, like, trying to brutally kill your girlfriend in front of you. Sadistically.
And Bats, too, because Bats didn't do anything, really, except, like, you know, commit the crime that they were all together on committing and, like...
Encouraging him to get the fuck out of there.
He's like,
you need this rebar in your chest.
And he was like, I'm just gonna brutally destroy you right now.
Oh, yeah, I guess I literally forgot that he did literally kill Bats, too.
Correct.
So he killed... two people, has at least two or three other felony murders, has about 45 bank robberies, and he gets 5 years for this? Because he has, like, three character witnesses that, like, I don't know, like, was it that bad?
Sorry after carjacking me.
Yeah, like, how did they find them? How did they track them down?
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering.
He must have told his lawyers. He's like, look, no, I stole a purple caprice from this innocent old black lady, and I gave her her purse, and she'll vouch for me.
She'll vouch for me.
Find the Asian lady whose red car I stole, and I gave her her baby back. Like, she'll vouch for me. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't get the hero that was shooting them up after the armored truck to be like, oh, you know what? Like, I saw a shotgun from the passenger seat pointed at my face, but then for some reason, the car just did, like, this weird little loop-de-loo so that he missed the shot. And I think that was because he's a good guy.
Yeah, why didn't they put that guy in it, too?
Why wasn't he on the stand? He was a perfect character witness.
Uh-huh. It makes sense in the context of all the other fucking character witnesses.
Every time he gets these character witnesses, it's literally someone who committed another crime. Like, they'd have to go, like, this carjacking was, like, sort of part of the bank robbery, but was, like, just sort of minor side thing. But they had to go find a separate carjacking he committed and be like, oh, actually, he was, like, sort of nice about that carjacking. Like, it's like, that's just an extra carjacking. We didn't even know you did that one. You know? And then his father's just like, oh, yeah, he was dragged into this years ago. It's like, what do you mean years? I didn't know about all... They're like, going back to the... You know, checking all the places he cased. It's like, why did he involve this 8-year-old child in one of them? It's like, oh, he didn't want to seem suspicious. Like, what are we doing? It's like, I don't know. And then Batch is, like, really mad at, like, he's like, oh, did you make me miss the shot? It was like, the only thing the shot would have accomplished is murdering that man for no reason. Mm-hmm. It's like, he says no, but it's like, yeah, I didn't want you to kill somebody and go out more attack. Like, you're allowed to say that.
Right.
But he lies to him, and Batch is like, I know you're lying. It's like, yeah, obviously he's lying. What the fuck are we talking about?
Right. Just say, like, I didn't want us to get in even more, like, I didn't want to draw any more heat. You were drawing heat. This is not what the plan was. Like, we have a boss. We have a job. Like, there was a very specific plan, and that was not a part of the plan. That was all a very reasonable thing to say. And instead, he said, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that only sets it up for Bats to be intuitive about when Baby's lying, but I guess they could have just, like, played some poker or something and accomplished the same thing in 30 seconds, because I was really pro Bats shooting that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that might be a controversial stance, but...
Wait, the pro-murder stance?
Because here's why. You know, you can be a hero, that's fine. But as soon as you realize that there's, like, a bank robbery going on or an armored truck robbery, and you insist on opening your center console to grab a pistol and open fire at the truck that just committed these heinous crimes, right? If that is your choice, and then later on you grab an MP5 from your passenger seat that was just sort of sitting on there and then open fire, it's like you should have grabbed the MP5 first, and you probably could have avoided a lot of damage that happened to the city. So, like, I wasn't a fan of that hero. For that reason.
Yeah, that kind of, now that you say it like that, it kind of seems like that hero guy woke up looking for a fight.
I think he did, and he chose the wrong tool for the job. Like, he had an MP5 loaded ready to go on the passenger seat of his truck. He should have just grabbed that first if he was willing to open fire on somebody. So yeah, I didn't care for him.
Sure.
And I mean, he wasn't going to be a character witness, it turns out, at the end, so it's just like, why save him? You know? Baby, you didn't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Well, it's just another thing in this movie that's just like, why did you guys bother doing any of this? Why did you bother? They spent way too much time and money on these scenes that ended up going nowhere and serving no purpose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of my favorite scenes, I think it might just be because I love the song, is the Easy Like Sunday Morning, because I really thought he was going to be out of the game, right? And that's his celebratory song, which we realize later on is the song that his mother has on the tape, on the mom tape. And that's maybe why he loves, I don't know, the other girl. Yeah, I thought that scene had a cool effect where they shot it at like 1.25 or 1.5x speed of the song, and then they just played it at 1x to match the pace of the song, and it gave like a cool slow motion effect. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So here's what I'm going to say. This is my other kind of pillar of this conversation, is that like I understand what Edgar Wright was doing in this movie. I understand that it was stylistic. I see that it's like a comic book. It's like a musical heist. We're going to have fun today. We're going to listen to some music and we're going to watch some cool stuff happen on the screen. I get that. And I'm not saying that this movie was 100% a failure. There was some successful stylistic choices that were made, and I appreciate that. But I think that overall, the final result is that it's all smoke and mirrors. Like, there was no substance underneath it. They didn't get the quality writing that they needed to make it as good a movie as it thought it was. You know, that movie spent however long it was, 2 hours, maybe it's way too long, just walking around with like the biggest smile on his smuggest look on its face, just being like, yeah, this one's gonna be a good one. You're gonna like this movie. And I can't stand that. I can't stand that it thought it was so good when it actually was like, not. There was nothing underneath the surface. Just like Baby's character had nothing underneath the surface, Debbie's character had nothing underneath the surface, Kevin Spacey, nothing. It was all smoke and mirrors. It was all just that cute scene at the beginning. Everyone was still just like high on that scene, and that carried them through the rest of the movie.
That's because Ansel just, you know, exudes swagger.
Just, you know, so charismatic. Wow.
I mean, they try to make him really cool. Like, they have the driving, and they have, like, him doing parkour, and having all the, like, sunglasses, and the whatever. Like, they have a lot of stuff where they try to make this guy cool, but he's just, like, not.
Right.
And you can't fake that.
He fiercely fights against the cool that they're trying to impose on him.
Yeah, and, like, this movie is like they had an idea for a music video and decided to make a feature film. Like, because you don't need character development in your music video. And like, I get that. Like, I don't ask for that, you know, but like, if I'm going to have to watch this for 2 hours, I got to like know who these people are. Mm-hmm. And this is just like so nothing, you know, in a way that was just like super boring. I don't know. I thought this was like really bad, but I'm sure this is someone's favorite movie. I think the kid's antics sort of reminded me way too much of myself and made me understand how uncool I am. Because I'm like, oh, this is what it looks like, you know, seeing this from the outside.
How often do you do stunt driving?
Me, pretty often. You used to drive with me.
Yeah, you whip it around in the leaf?
Yeah, we used to drive, you know, we used to drive around in Pittsburgh with my music and my, you know, I was just like, oh yeah, I was sort of the cringiest person.
I didn't know you were a career criminal against your will.
You didn't like this because it was holding up a mirror to your face, and you didn't like what you saw.
That is, that's actually how I felt. I was like, oh my god, I thought I was cool and had a lot of swagger, but I actually am just incredibly cringy.
I think you're losing swagger up there.
And this makes me rethink my relationship with that diner waitress that I thought was flirting with me, and you know, all these things.
It's just an overdone trope now, and you know, maybe like in 2017, like that, you know, that was the last time that this trope was okay, I guess, because we all loved it. And I'll be honest, and I didn't get to say this earlier, but when I saw this movie in theaters, and I loved it. I thought, wow, that was so cool and fun, and loved it. But I was just fooled. I was brought in under the, you know, the magic of this movie, and I didn't realize how bad the writing was until we rewatched it recently, and I was like, oh my god, I was duped. We were all duped. But like, googling it and like kind of going down some rabbit holes, like, people really do still like this movie. Like, it still has like a pretty good rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's like an 88 or something like that, which is too high. It's too high for it.
Oh, I think it was I saw 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb 7.5.
Oh, 92? Shut up.
It made a lot of money. It made $200 million on like a $30 million budget. Ugh. Yeah, this was very successful. I also saw it in theaters because I think I saw the trailer, which looked cool.
Yep.
Because like,
it did.
You don't need a lot of character development in trailers, I guess. And then when you see it, you're like, no, that was all the character development there was. It was just that trailer.
I mean, for how much you love Fast and Furious movies, yeah, I'm surprised your conclusion on this one wasn't that you loved it, because it at least had stunt driving. Are you not a fan of the Transporter?
I haven't really seen the Transporter.
Oh, you'll love them, then.
I do like the Fast and Furious. I mean, the Fast and Furious, though, the characters all have distinct and are, like, fun. These characters were nothing if not fun.
Right.
I guess. I didn't really stick the line in there. These characters are just not, like...
They're not fun.
None of this is fun. I don't know. I really didn't like this. I feel like the guy's doing fine. He's okay. But like, this is, I'm sure, people's favorite movie, and I'm sure the same people who like Scott Pilgrim, which I also found a little bit like, okay, this is a movie. One is like more fun, I think. This like.
Well, the difference, and so this is what I was thinking about. So I saw Scott Pilgrim, like, many, it came out in 2010, I think, and, like, I loved it at the time. And I did rewatch it, like, a year or two ago, and I thought, I was like, okay, yeah, no, it's annoying now. But I think, like, at a certain time in my life, like, when, you know, you're a teen or whatever, it has some merit to it. I think the different, and what I was thinking about last night is that this is very Scott Pilgrim-y, and this was even before I knew that Edgar Wright had developed or directed Scott Pilgrim. The difference between these movies and what made Scott Pilgrim a more successful movie, in my opinion, is that there was at least one likable character in Scott Pilgrim, like Roman Roy, what's his name? The Macaulay Culkin. Kieran Culkin.
The roommate.
He's incredible in Scott Pilgrim. He was so cute and funny, and like, and there was moments of good writing. There was like a lot of moments of good writing. And this movie had zero likable characters, and the writing was just, it was so lazy and it was so bad. And like, if you told me that it was written by AI, I would believe you. But it didn't exist in 2017 or whenever this movie was written.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of that. I don't know. I was never like, I was never like a super big Scott Pilgrim person.
Yeah.
But like, that just, at least that one like caught bigger with the zaniness. This was like surprisingly flat.
Yeah.
I don't know. And like, that was supposed to be like larger than life. This was like pretty like small. Like, it all felt very small. Like the.
Yeah.
Like all
money orb heist. Like, okay.
Like, the scene, yeah, it wasn't like an Ocean's 11, like, I don't know, it wasn't meant to be, I don't think, but, like, everything was, like, very sparse, like, none of the set pieces were, like, particularly, like, that's the thing, like, you started with the Fast and Furious is supposed to be, like, a big spectacle, like, you know, there's, like, some, like, the things he does, like, the most impact, like, memorable driving he does is he does, like, the shell game with the cars in the tunnel, I guess. The Fast and Furious, they drag a safe around Rio, and it's, like, insane. And they, like, kill half of Rio with a safe that's swinging around on the back of a car. Like, I don't know. It's insane stuff. This is, like, just so boring. It's, like...
He drifts everywhere. I mean, I think it was the first scene where they drift into a parking space.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, through camera angles, there's a parking garage pillar, and they swap out the stuntman for Baby. I thought that was pretty well done. I don't know. I thought that those scenes were pretty good. The stunt driving.
Yeah, I guess I don't care about stunt driving.
Yeah. I feel like I've just seen too many car chase scenes in my life to care.
car stuff, I don't know. I'm not really a big car guy. I don't know. It doesn't do much for me.
I'll be honest, though. I've never seen a single Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, you should watch all the Fast and Furious movies. Especially Fast 5.
We could do an episode on Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, we definitely should. Fast 5 is great. You should watch Fast 5 and see if you like it.
What, like, don't I need to watch 1,
no,
2,
absolutely
3, 4?
Not. That's not how those work. They basically soft re... Like, so the way it works is, like, Vin Diesel and Paul Walker are the main characters, and then Vin Diesel isn't in the second one, but Tyrese is. Then the third one is just some other random people in Tokyo. Then the fourth one is basically a soft reboot that has no Tyrese, but is back to Vin Diesel and Paul Walker. And then the fifth one is when they start doing, like, Ocean's 11. So they have, like, 20 guys. And that's when, like, the series as we know it starts.
Okay.
And the point is, that's a fun movie.
I could watch a fun movie, you know, and I could watch something that would hopefully redeem, you know, the missed opportunity that was Baby Driver.
Oh, and I just, well, at the end, she's like writing to him. I don't know why we need to know his name.
Yeah. She's didn't like, matter.
I heard it so many times in court, but I can't believe your name is my. It's like, people have names. Like, that's not like a crazy name. I assume that's supposed to be like a pun, like in Sonic. But like,
yeah,
it's just like, why even have that line? Like,
right?
I thought his name was just Baby.
I sincerely thought his name was Baby.
I thought that was just like a quirky, yeah, fun name he had. But they're like, no, let's dispel some of the mystery of anything interesting. His name is actually Miles. Does that matter? Nope, doesn't matter. Yeah. It's like, why?
I had a lot of questions at the end of this movie, but not a single one of them was, what's his real name?
Because I think when they show him with the mugshot, do they say it on the mugshot?
I don't know.
I don't remember that.
And again, like, no one cares. Like, who fucking cares?
Because I have seen this once before, and I like didn't remember if we were gonna like learn his name or if it like mattered. But then, like, when I saw him doing the mugshots, I thought like, oh, I assumed mugshots have like the person's name on the little like board. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he has the little card, but doesn't have his name on it. So it seemed like we weren't gonna find out his name. And at the end, they were just like, the audiences need to know. Get Lily James back in the fucking booth. Have him do a voiceover.
Incredible reveal. We had to know this.
I can't believe you. And then she's like, again, like, obviously, this girl, like, I thought it was the last scene meant to be like a dream sequence because he hasn't aged. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he didn't age even a single bit. No, I think it was just supposed to be like, Lily James, what a good woman she is. She waited for her man. And there she is.
Yeah, like, how long would... I think it had to be a dream at the... Like, right? Because, like...
I mean, hopefully. I can only hope that you're right.
It's like, move on with your life, girl. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Like, seriously. You knew him for, like, 48 hours, and in 75% of those hours, he was doing crimes.
Yeah, like, all he did was, like, almost get you killed a few times. Like, you almost got shot by the cops, you almost got killed by Bats, you almost got killed by Buddy. Like, all he does is put you in danger. Like,
She's insane to stick around for him. She's insane.
And he's so dull. That's all I know about this movie. I thought it was a nephew for sure.
Ugh, I was worried that we were going to hop on here and you were going to be like, I thought it was excellent. And then I was going to be like, okay, well, I guess I just don't know what good movies are because I hated it so much, so ferociously. So I'm glad that my opinion is shared by at least one other person. It is also a nephew for me.
I mean, this might be a good movie. I don't know, but this was just so boring.
No, it's not. It's a bad movie. Everybody's just been doped. Marshall, are you?
Here we are, two in a row. Yeah, okay. There's a lot of bad movies out there, mm-hmm. and it's not that I would recommend that anyone go see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The way I heard about this, I think somebody said, "Oh yeah, they loved it, and you should watch it." And I was like, "Okay, I will." And it was, you know, a couple years after the fact. And then upon watching it, I was like, I mean, "It's okay. It's not really my favorite, but it wasn't a bad movie." You know, I'm not going to fucking recommend it to anyone, but I think at the end of the day, like, it's good enough. It aims for fun, you know. I think it has some redeeming qualities despite its admitted flaws. And I think it belongs in the uncle category. Wouldn't recommend it, but at least an uncle.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, like, it was trying so hard that I feel like if you're going to try that hard, you have to land it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like God, it was trying so hard.
The effort was so noticeable. You could see the effort, and it's like, I don't know. If you're going to, like, show me all the, like, the work, you know, if you're going to, like, break my immersion and stuff, like, you have to do the thing. Also, she looks very British. Like, she is British. Yes. But she looks very British. So I don't know why she was a Southern dining waitress. I know we have Southern actresses. not that, like, we need to, but, like, she looks so British. Just let her be British if you're going to do that.
But she brought so much to the part that was so uniquely her. No, anyone could have done the stupid shit that she did in this movie. Anyone.
I don't know. This movie was made for, like, video essays and stuff. Like, I'm sure people had a great time, like, breaking down the music and the colors and the costuming and whatever. But it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, and then even in that case, again, Kevin Spacey's wardrobe. What were they thinking? It's definitely.
It felt like Kevin Spacey must have been like going through his trial when they shot this, because he only had like 10 minutes to film his scenes and would only film in front of a chalkboard. You know, like.
Yeah, the warehouse was actually just like the warehouse behind the jail where they were holding him for the trial.
Yeah, all the people at the end were just character witnesses at his trial. It's just like, I don't know.
They sectioned off a corner of the parking garage, and that's where they shot.
Yeah, it must have been. And, like, I don't know. And also, Ansel Elgort, I think, has been accused of sexual assault. Kevin Spacey's been accused of sexual assault. I don't think Jamie Foxx has done anything, but John Hamm, I think, has been accused of, like, some pretty serious hazing when he was in college. Serious. I think he, like, blinded some. I think he did something. I don't want to make stuff up, but I like some pretty serious assault when he was in college. Like the characters, there's only like 5 actors in this. I guess like 6. A lot of them have done some pretty bad stuff.
Let's start pulling from different barrels here.
Yeah. Oh, Jamie Foxx in November 2023 was also accused of sexual assault. He denies it, so fair enough, I guess.
But, I believe it, though. Like, I'm sorry. Like, again, it's just everyone in this movie is on, they're all drinking from the same cup, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Uh-oh, doesn't bode well for John Bernthal, I guess.
No.
But maybe he realized, he's like, wait a second, all of you are pedophiles, I'm out. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we'll just get Jamie Foxx to replace you.
That might have been what it was. He was just like, listen, I'm a criminal ghost criminal, but I just can't stand these people. So, I don't know, guys. Well, that's all I got. We good?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Yep. Well, thanks. Thanks again for joining, Chloe.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. Had fun. Yeah.